paramedic here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Get your sexy, huh?
You ready?
We are. Third hour. Darren, Donick, and Chase. ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are. Wednesday afternoon. This time, we always talk to Tim Hasselbeck, and he's brought to you by Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. Tim, what's up?
What's up?
Well, we've had...
Celebrating the victory, baby, midweek.
Say, we're just doing our Titans postgame show on a Wednesday. You know, typical stuff in 2020.
It does feel weird.
Are you one of those guys that now you're like, hey, I kind of like Tuesday night football. Maybe this should be a thing.
No. I think because I do college and pro football stuff for ESPN, I already feel like it's on too many nights of the week.
Fair.
So you don't think this is going to creep in anybody's mind in an NFL office of, you know what, Tuesday night wasn't so bad?
Oh, I don't. I think that they would love to own every night.
You know, right.
And so, you know, with a lot of the talk prior to college football being played, there was a lot of talk about Saturdays and Sundays because there wasn't going to be college football to watch on Saturdays. So, yeah, there's no doubt you want a captive audience, plain and simple. It's why, you know, Thursday night football, you know, even with the short week, guys are, you know, generally excited to play on it. Same thing with, you know, when you're the Sunday night game or Monday night football. So, you know, Tuesday at 6 locally, it was the best show on TV.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So where do you stand on this statement? Was this all about what the Titans did, or is this more about what the Bills didn't do, and maybe are the Titans a little better than we thought and the Bills not as good as we thought? How would you answer what we saw last night?
The Bills are good, plain and simple. The Bills are a good football team. They're a well-coached team. They're good defensively. They have a rising star at quarterback. That's a good football team. So I think it just speaks to the impressive nature of the win for the Titans. And, you know, look at it in listening to and reading some of the stuff that Ryan Tannehill, you know, had said, you know, prior to the game and then even after the game. I do think there was this element of kind of the uncontrollable with the virus and, you know, how people were viewing them, especially around the league, about stuff that was going on inside the Titans locker room and facility, how they've handled it, that type of stuff. But I would not be surprised if it created this focus for the football team to go out and play well. I really think that, you know, the human nature side of it really, I think, is kind of was showing itself in terms of how he answered a lot of questions about their situation.
You've got a unique perspective on this show because you played the game, so you've got the player's angle, and now you've been in the media for a good while, and you understand this angle just as well. So now that you're on this side and have been on this side for a good while, how do you explain kind of – because you know how this dynamic works. Look, Adam Schefter has a lot of really good sources within every organization, people within the walls. That's how he gets his information. Mike Florio is no different on NBC. These people on these national platforms like you have sources within walls, sources that know things. And then they get on those platforms like you're on and ESPN and they report that or social media. How did it go from 6 days ago? Boy, the Titans, all my sources are telling me the Titans have messed up big time. And the league is about to deliver the hammer on them. and this is what I'm being told from this person, this or not from this person, from my source within this organization, and blah, 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 blah. Like I said, these people talk to people who know. And here we are today, sitting here on the aftermath of a 42-16 win in the NFL, and the Titans are singing Kumbaya, and there's nothing to see here, and it looks like there's nothing to do, according to the league. How did we get to that 5-6 days later?
Well, I can tell you this, because I talked a lot with Adam and Mort last week, a lot. And, I did an interview with you guys last week with the knowledge of some of the stuff that was going to break, which, you know, basically broke, you know, immediately after, you know, my interview with you guys. And that feeling of like there was going to be a lot of punishment was universal. Universal. It wasn't just a local buzz. It wasn't just a national buzz. I mean, it was universal. Now, I will say, like, in talking to Adam and Mort, like, I don't think that there was ever this sense of, and I think both guys probably said as much to me, you know, in terms of forfeiture of games and things like that, like, I don't know that was ever discussed by the league office. I don't know if that was ever a serious consideration. But I do think in terms of, following protocols and punishing the people in charge of being able to enforce the protocols, which really would fall on, Robinson and Vrabel, I think that the league was approaching it with the idea that if these guys weren't doing this right, then we need to make them know that that's not acceptable, and the rest of the league is going to be aware of it. I think in the process of them trying to figure everything out, and then also seeing, you know, what Tennessee was doing by comparison to what other teams around the league were doing, I think they realized that, like, yes, these are protocols, but they're not foolproof. And some of the things that are being asked to do to be 100% compliant with it may not be totally, totally realistic. Like, if you are going to eat in the facility, like, what does that look like? You know, and yeah, we are going to say, you know, you're going to be contact traced, but what does that look like? And so I kind of alluded to what Ryan, you know, said about, you know, some of the situation. Look, if you don't have any symptoms and you're testing positive, and then you do have symptoms and maybe significant symptoms and are continue to repeatedly test negative, don't you lose a little confidence in the process? You have to. So I think there just became an understanding of how difficult this can be.
Was the biggest mistake the league made was letting the Titans and the protocols, because that allowed them to do that. It wasn't against league policy or protocols for them to get on that plane and go to Minnesota and play against the Vikings? Was that their biggest mistake early on, and, you know, everybody trying to figure out what's the right and wrong ways to do things?
I mean, look, we still have no Minnesota players with a positive test, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so you can, and this is what we talked about last week, you can play a game. Like, you can clearly play a game and not infect people, playing actual football. Okay, so now it comes to, all right, traveling. Well, like, there has been a lot of information about being on an airplane. If you're wearing a mask and you're spread out, like, the spread in that environment is, like, there's not some added risk to that. So, and I think part of the, kind of the buzz and part of the things that were swirling and I think people are trying to figure out were, okay, was there a coach that was in close proximity that repeatedly was coming to work when he should have been in quarantine? You know, was there some knowledge of that? And, you know, and then part of what happened after that, to kind of, you know, I guess continue with your previous question, Darren, was, okay, now guys are gathering. Like, were they aware that that was not, like, when were they made aware that that wasn't okay? What's the limits to being able to gather? And, look, I think that that's, like, that's really, we talked about this last week. Like, if you're in, we're going to keep pointing to the quarterback, but, like, if you're him, like, you're going to go 7 days not throwing a football?
right.
and then go play in an NFL game? Like, and so if you can't gather, who are you throwing to?
Well, along
no,
those,
trying to throw it off, throw it through the old tire swing.
Yeah,
that's all you need to do.
Yeah,
throw it to the kids.
Who's gonna retrieve it?
You got to go get it yourself.
Yeah. No. Okay. So along those lines, then let me get now your quarterback perspective. So you're from your playing days through your eyes. We've been talking about today in the first 2 hours this stat that CBS put out there, NFL on CBS, of comparing Tannehill and Mahomes in their last 14 games. They have identical records. They've thrown the same amount of picks. Tannehill's thrown more touchdowns. He's got a higher quarterback rating. And Mahomes is thrown for like 600 more yards. That's it. And so you could technically look at those stats and say, and by the way, they're both 11-3, that Tannehill's been the better quarterback. What are you seeing? Why has it worked so well? Was it just a complete failure on the Dolphins' part? And it's more about their organization. Why you always hear, you know, change of scenery can change this guy. But how many times has that really happened? Well, in this one, this may be the poster child for that. So why has it turned out that way here?
Yeah, I think that it's really important to have an awesome relationship between the quarterback and the play caller. I think guys have to see things the same way. And, you know, so sometimes you're fortunate to go into a situation where, you know, you're sharing a brain on stuff and you see it the same way. And so I think, you know, for Ryan, he's ended up in a situation where that's clearly the case with Arthur Smith. And it's really important. And I think that to look at how it went for him in Miami, I think he had 17 starts coming out of college. So, you know, he was one of these players that, it was interesting. It was undeniable that he was smart. It was undeniable that he was a really, really good athlete and had a lot of skills. But he was still probably, in a sense, learning the quarterback position. You end up with Adam Gase. You know, Adam Gase kind of comes from this environment of, like, put a ton on the quarterback at the line of scrimmage pre-snap. And that can just bog guys down. It just slow them down in terms of how they play. And so I think that, you know, I think that there's probably been, it's been like a refreshing, like, oh yeah, like this is how I like to play football. This is how I like to see it. Now, I don't know if that's exactly how he would describe it, but I feel like that is a situation that I have seen, you know, throughout my time, either as a player or doing what I'm doing now, where it's like, you know, guys either get, you know, stuck in the mud with what they're doing, or they just feel like they've been completely freed to just go out and play.
Talking to Tim Hasselbeck from ESPN. Another aspect that's been a theme this morning, Tim, and it's really been a theme all year for the Titans, even going back the last couple of years, they seem to have done a great job of getting mileage out of the replacement-level talent, the guys that they find on the practice squad or off of other teams' practice squads, the undrafted free agents. That's a remarkable trait, I think, and not every team can do that. I'm sure you've been on some teams where if it got to those guys and those guys had to make a difference, you really didn't think you were going to get much. You were hoping just to get by. But they patch holes really well with these guys.
Willie, I think I was one of those guys. and referring to the guys that you're not going to get that much out of. Yeah, I mean, I definitely was part of, like, I'm sure when people looked at the game that week, were like, are they playing like the all off the street team? I think that it is important to have a good scouting department and to have to whoever's in charge of, whether it's a position coach or whether it's somebody in the scouting department that's in charge of, you know, your undrafted free agent that you bring to camp, or somebody in your pro scouting department that is, you know, really monitoring, you know, practice squads around the league and guys that get cut and that type of stuff. And so if you do a good job of that, you're going to end up finding good players, because the league and the history of the league is littered with guys that were undrafted, guys that were, you know, cut by a couple different teams before they found a role, you know, somewhere. Look, I mean, look at Mike Vrabel. You know, Mike Vrabel was a better Patriot than a better than Steeler. He just was. And I think it's because, you know, they identified him as the type of player that they wanted. They helped develop him, find a role for him, and then his role continued to grow. So I do think they've done a nice job of that, a really nice job of that. And then I think it's kind of one of those things that ends up being not necessarily contagious, but it's, you know, you start to surround, you know, mediocre players or okay players with guys that are really playing well. Well, like, then it helps kind of, you know, raise the water level, which, you know, raises all ships. And so, you know, I do think that they've done a nice job with that. And, you know, I think you can kind of run down in each segment, whether it's in the secondary or at linebacker or on the defensive line. And then same thing when you go to the offensive side of the ball. So, yeah, I think there's a combination of factors that create that environment to work the way it has.
They have shown a lot of traits of being an extremely mentally tough team, figuring out how to win, dealing with adversity, all of that. The challenges were obvious last night. How big, comparatively, in your mind, Tim, is the challenge of having to come back and do it again on Sunday?
Yeah, that's really hard because I do know, and you can see it where, you know, guys, you know, come out of the lineup, even if it's just for a couple plays or whatever it is, the turnaround's hard. And, you know, to get ready to play, and look, I was a quarterback and, you know, primarily a backup quarterback. And so, look, I don't know what it's like to play 65 snaps on the offensive line or at linebacker and then go out to a Wednesday practice and then get ready to go play on, you know, on a Sunday. But it's difficult. So, yeah, I think that, you know, there's going to have to be flexibility in terms of how you prepare now. And Mike Vrabel is going to have to probably be creative with the schedule and how guys, you know, get treatment and get healthy and feel fresh on Sunday. And then there's just the mental component of it too, where, look, part of, you know, the benefit of a week is, like, you know, you're preparing all week, you're getting that game plan, you know, you want to know it like the back of your hand. It's kind of nice to be able to be like, all right, like, now I can kind of take a little bit of a breather before I have to kick that up again. You know, it's almost like being in finals where it's like test after test. So, yeah, it's a challenge, and I think how they kind of organize their week is they're going to have to be creative with it.
How big are the problems for Phillip Rivers? Do you think they can find a formula that will complement what is obviously a pretty good defense?
Yeah, my biggest thing with Phillip when they signed him is he's played a lot of football. He's played a lot of really good football. He is careless with the ball, though. I mean, and it's kind of one of these things, I think, you know, not that you become numb to it, but, like, in some ways, the more interceptions you throw, the more numb you become to throwing an interception or fumbling in the pocket. And I just don't think it ever makes sense to sign a guy who, you know, will turn over the ball a bunch. Like, if you're going to sign a guy and then look up at the end of the year and then, like, you know what, he threw 7 picks and he had 3 fumbles. Like, at least he gave us a chance because he only put the ball in harm's way 10 times. But if you're going to have a guy that's going to turn the football over and, you know, make mistakes that a young guy can make, then I'm playing the young guy every time. I just, that's how I would be. And so, you know, I know there's a strong relationship there with Phillip. But I think if he continues to play the way he's playing, I think that we'll see a quarterback change before halfway through point, you know, of the season.
We're talking to Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, brought to you by Red Spirits and Wine here on Darren Donick and Chase. So Derrick Henry for the Titans, only 57 yards last night. You may look at those numbers and go, okay, that's not very Derrick Henry-like on 19 carries, but from your point of view, how effective is he being in opening up the passing game more for Ryan Tannehill, specifically play action?
Yeah, the play action numbers for Tannehill, I know you guys are referencing some of the numbers in terms of, you know, his last, whatever it's been, 15 starts, 14 starts, or whatever the numbers were. Like, his play action numbers are off the charts crazy. And you know, I think there's an element of, I guarantee you that when people are getting ready to play the Titans, you know, and the first defensive meetings you go into, it's, look, they've got a back that's built like a defensive end. Like, we've got to stop him first. They got to be priority number one. And it probably should be, you know. I mean, nobody. I've never been around a coach that's like, look, I'm fine, you know, with the team running the ball down our throat. Like, there's never been a coach, you know, on the planet that's okay with that. And so I think that's a starting point with everybody in terms of how they talk about defending the Titans. And, you know, so along with that, obviously creates opportunities. It creates opportunities for the tight ends, for the wide receivers, and, you know, obviously the quarterback. So I would, like, if I'm a Titans fan, I'm fine. Like, if as long as, you know, Derrick Henry isn't leaving a game with, like, 9 rush attempts, like, I think you need to be okay with it regardless of, you know, how many yards he rushes for. Because we've seen him, you know, rush for less than 60 yards and the quarterback have a great night. So I think that's probably the more important thing, and I think less ego is one of the things that helps make that sustainable.
How much are you buying into the Las Vegas Raiders right now?
I think they're really good. I think they have a good coaching staff. I think they've got talented players. I think anytime, even with no fans, that you go into Arrowhead and beat the Chiefs, I think it needs to be something people notice. And the running back is a really, really talented player. They have one of the best tight ends in the league. They've got speed at wide receiver, like a lot of speed at wide receiver. And I think a quarterback that's better than people, you know, probably have ever thought of him as. Derek Carr has a lot of physical talent. And so, you know, if he's coached well and stuff, that's an hard offense to defend. And, you know, and I think defensively they were a team that didn't have a lot of talent. And I think they're slowly, you know, getting better on that side of the ball. And so, yeah, I think there are teams, the Bills being one of them, you know, we saw them last night, the Raiders being another one where it's like, look, there's some AFC teams that, you know, all of a sudden are hard out for anybody that they play. And, you know, maybe there's some other teams that have been kind of that team, you know, the Houston Texans or the Jacksonville Jaguars or, you know, a team like that, that they're just not anymore and they're not right now. So, yeah, I think both those teams, you know, Bills and Raiders are teams that you could easily see in the postseason.
Tim, one more. Dak Prescott, we saw the injury on Sunday to him.
Wait a second. You can't ask me one more question and have it not be about Teddy Bridgewater and how amazing he is. You can't do that.
Yeah, he got all of his Bridgewater stuff in Monday and Tuesday.
Okay. I'll shift.
You want to gloat about Bridgewater, how amazing he is?
Three in a row, Tim. Three in a row. Teddy B getting it done. We had Harry Douglas on yesterday. He said he's the best quarterback in the NFC South right now. Do you agree?
No, I don't agree. And, I didn't have to think about it long. Here's
like,
what I'd say.
No.
I generally like quarterbacks that throw touchdown passes. Okay? So, you know, he's won three in a row. Is that what you said? He's doing great. I think he's thrown 6 touchdown passes. Am I right about that? I think I'm right about that. Throwing 6. Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, I think is the same as Joe Burrow. Okay? And what Russell Wilson's thrown how many at this point? Like 13?
A lot.
I don't know what he's doing. He's thrown a bunch.
This isn't about Russell Wilson. So, this is about Teddy Bridgewater.
So I'm still not jumping on the bandwagon, okay? Still not jumping on the bandwagon on Teddy Bridgewater. Look, I don't think he's I'm not saying that Teddy Bridgewater should, you know, he's nothing more than a backup. That's not what I'm saying about Teddy Bridgewater. But I don't think that the Carolina Panthers are going to look up and feel about their quarterback situation the way the Tennessee Titans currently feel about their quarterback situation after signing a guy that was a starter somewhere else and is now their starter. But listen, man, if I'm wrong about that, because Chase and I are so close, I'm okay with Chase taking victory lap after victory lap.
I And I will. And I'll save you a spot on the bandwagon. Don't worry.
And see, that's why I'm okay. Like, Darren, I'd be like, all of a sudden, I'm busy. College football schedule got real busy, and I'm not available. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I believe that, by the way. Tim, always a pleasure. We gotta bounce. Mike Vrabel at the bottom of the hour. So always good to talk to you. Thanks for doing this, as always.
Good to talk to you guys. See ya.
All right, Tim Hasselbeck, brought to you by Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue every Wednesday at noon. Mike Vrabel, next. Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Good stuff from Tim Hasselbeck. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase on this Wednesday afternoon. Mike Vrabel about to speak right now with the media about last night's 42-16 victory.
A disapproving look, though. He'll give you a disapproving look, though, Mike.
Go ahead, Teresa.
Mike, with the continuity and maturity of this team, that help as you try to deal with a short week coming off an emotional win and honestly a couple of emotional weeks?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's what we have to do. We, you get back to work, win or lose, and still try to find ways to improve. I think that that's something that we've always talked about. I think that the players understand that and appreciate that, that if you don't, continue to improve and find ways to be better each and every week, that you're not going to be where you want to be at the end of the season.
Teron?
Yeah, Coach, going back and looking at the game last night, really good play design on John's touchdown to get him free underneath. How much is Coach Smith's play design going into the efficiency that you guys have in the red zone?
Well, I think there's a lot of people that are involved, and I don't think, I think that Arthur does a good job of leading that unit. But I think, and I know that all our coaches are involved heavily in what we're doing to make sure that the players understand the concepts and what we're trying to get out of the play and understand the details. So, whether that be Keith, Sully, Tony, Rob, Todd, Pat, everybody is doing a job over there. They have a job to do each week and, provide information to Arthur. And then we kind of figure out what's best for us in each and every situation.
What made you guys so efficient yesterday in the red zone? 6 for 6. That's something that I don't believe has been done in franchise history.
And that's something that's been a strength, and it was good to see that come out last night. There's some scheme plays and there's some plays that have been base concepts throughout training camp and what we would have even done last year. So I think it's a good mix of what the players understand and then, trying to find some plays. And then guys just make plays. Ryan came out of there and somebody came out of coverage. He dumped it to Jonnu, and then the other one, nobody was open. And Ryan, was able to get the touchdown with his legs, the celebration. Left a lot to be desired. So I think it's a good combination of the scheme and mostly the players end up, going out there and making plays.
Jim?
Mike, are you, optimistic about getting some more guys off the COVID list? How do you kind of manage that throughout the course and continue with that? The situation with Fulton coming up and being active last night, you just didn't feel comfortable in him loose without practice.
Sure. Jim, we're going to ask from now on that you type your questions into the chat room and that you no longer get to talk anymore or you'll have to go through Ashley. Maybe you could send your questions to Ashley and then Ashley could ask them. But we are hopeful that some of those players would return that are on the COVID list here in the next few days. After that, I have no idea. I stopped actually listening, Jim.
And I think my Wi-Fi is going in and out. I apologize. But with Fulton, he was active, but without practicing throughout the week, is that probably just didn't feel comfortable in turning to
I think that was hard. That would have been hard to ask. So we just made a decision that we felt was best for the team.
Kayla?
Hey, Coach. Could you address the Kamale Correa situation, just maybe what's going on there with everything about him possibly requesting a trade and why he might not be happy?
We've spoken to Kamale. John and I both have spoken with him today and told him that he would be released. Now things change. Someone may, reach out, and that would be another situation that could happen. But, as of now, I think we'll plan on, going in another direction and moving on.
John?
Yeah, Mike, couple issues for you guys. I guess I wonder how much hand-in-hand they go. The third down issues and sacks also, how much would a little bit more pressure on the quarterback factor into improving that the third down situation?
Well, I thought we pressured them. We didn't tackle them, and we had guys free weren't able to bring them down. Sometimes there's, on third down there's coverage. Sometimes there's pressure, and we got to combine them both. And we'll keep working on it. And that's something that we have to improve. That must improve. It seems like every week, there's one phase that has to get better. And we did a great job of the X plays and the run game. And then last night was the third down. And give them credit, give Josh credit. He made plays, and so did the receivers. And, he was making a lot of good throws, from outside the pocket on the move, throwing across his body, throwing on the sideline. And so, again, I think it just starts with us coaching it better and then obviously executing it better.
One follow on another front. You've all often talked about turnover ratio, how important that is, but not only the fact that you guys are doing so well in it, but how much more important has become when you can punch in scores, repeatedly after getting those turnovers.
I think it just gives you an opportunity to create, more possessions, shorter fields, momentum. And we did, convert. We were able to do that, and our ability to take care of the football and then, not only create them, but take advantage of the opportunities that they give us. There's a lot more out there, but to be able to get them on special teams and on defense is going to go a long way.
Thanks. Eric?
Hey, Mike. Ryan's been sacked only three times in the first four games. We was just wondering your assessment to this point of the offensive line on that front, pass protection.
I mean, I think it's been okay. I mean, I think it can improve, like every other phase of our team. But, I think that they've been, conscious of it, conscious of taking care of the quarterback. I think the quarterback's done a good job of being decisive. I think Ryan's done a good job of being decisive with the ball. And then, like a few times last night, being able to extend the play, out onto the perimeter and either run it or find somebody downfield.
Buck?
Yeah, Mike, going back to Johnny's question about turnover differential, I guess how much more do you prioritize that and allow you? I mean, do you allow yourself to have a little more wiggle room with the yards that you give up when you know that you guys are going to be able to confuse quarterbacks like that and cause those turnovers?
Well, you'd like to not give up, any yards, but, sometimes, you do. Sometimes you have to, we're not relying on turnovers by any means. We feel like it's a critical part of the game. And, one of our, basically team keys each and every week is something that we focus on and concentrate on, practice it, coach it, try to point it out, and then try to take care of the football on offense and, with everybody that's handling the football. So, we have to continue to improve defensively and in all three phases, and special teams played their probably best game of the season. and it was against a really good unit. We felt was probably the best unit that we were going to face up to this date. And, you know, they really responded.
Paul?
Mike, when you're able to force a quarterback to read through progressions so often with maybe eight men in coverage like that, what are the risks on that? And you guys obviously did really well with it yesterday, but what's potentially the downside?
Well, that he, you know, he's able to hold the ball and guys uncover, and then, you know, the quarterback's, you know, forced to come off the route and the timing. But if they can, you know, complete those, it's hard to, you know, to stay tight and stay plastered with receivers or anybody in this league. But then there's also times where you're able to combine what would be a somewhat of a disruptive rush pattern with three players, and then you have guys in coverage. So, you know, it's something that we've mixed in and probably will continue to.
Jared?
Mike, when you guys win a lot of these games, some of your best wins, nobody or nothing in particular stands out in the stat column. Is that a product of complementary football that, other than maybe Derek rushing for 100 and something yards, normally you guys find a way to win without 500 yards passing or things of that magnitude?
I mean, I think that that's probably I mean, it's not that it's designed, but I think that that's, you know, something that you can look at and say, you know, when we execute these keys and, you know, we take care of the football, we get turnovers, you know, we're able to flip the field on a punt and not let the leading punt returner, who averages, you know, 13 or 14 yards a return, when we're able to limit him to 0 yards on a punt return, or we're able to take advantage of our punt return opportunities and you know, flip the field on them. And when we're able to, you know, affect the quarterback, not that it was perfect, but there were times where we felt like we affected them. You know, when you're executing those keys that we come up with each and every week, I think that's the byproduct of it.
And Mike, on Khalif, you had said before the Vikings game you wanted more out of the punt return game. What have you thought about him, both as a punt returner and a receiver, over the last two games?
I mean, I think that he works extremely hard. I think he takes advantage of a lot of his opportunities. It's 3rd and 20 yesterday. They were in two-man inside leverage and ran a great route, stemmed the guy outside, got inside, caught it in stride, and was able to get 21 yards or whatever we needed for the first down. And I think when there's been, you know, space there, I felt like he's been good with the football. He's taken care of it. He's been clean with the catch. You know, we gave him some opportunities and guys were, you know, we're blocking for him and we were close on a kickoff return and, you know, weren't able to get it, you know, and we'll try to improve there and continue to coach and work it up. But, you know, I think that Khalif is, you know, he practices hard. He's into it. He'll do whatever is best for the team each and every week.
Corey?
Coach, I wanted to ask you about the kind of the structure of the practice squad. In the past, it's been a really developmental position, but yesterday you were able to pull up four guys who have played significant football for you in the past. And talk about the structure and the value of that going into a situation like that.
You know, all those guys, you know, the structure is, you know, you can have 16 guys on the practice squad. There's exceptions that you can have veteran players on there. You know, Darren Bates is a guy that we've had with us in the past, and you know, he played significant time yesterday, and was a good contributor on special teams. Kareem Moore played significant snaps for us. You know, Cody Hollister had a third down conversion. You know, and then the other player we brought up, you know, Quiz. You know, we didn't have to use him, but I know that he's ready to go in the game at any time, and he's into it, and he can play more than one position. So, you know, those guys that give you versatility and can come up on a moment's notice was certainly key for us last night.
Joe?
Yeah, Mike, on Correa and on outside linebacker, how do you feel about your depth there at this point? And when he's healthy, do you feel like a guy like Roberson
is able to be a well-rounded player and give you some snaps there.
Yeah, we'll try to get Roby in there and work him in, and you know, we'll see how well-rounded he is. Each and every week. Not much to really add. Sometimes you take three outside linebackers, sometimes you take four, sometimes you take five, depending on what you need each and every week. So, we'll see where we are this week. A lot of it's going to be determined about injuries. That was it's a pretty taxing game for us physically. So we'll have to get healthy quickly for the Texans this week.
Terry?
Mike, how did Bo and Daquan come out of the game physically and give you the full complement of rep?
It's not just me.
They think the lifers have got to get some new internet. Terry, I didn't get much of that. Once it starts doing that, I just kind of laugh and look at Jim's little box here and just kind of smirk.
Oh, all right.
You can try it again, Terry. Go ahead.
How did Daquan and Bo come out of the game physically, and were you able to get, especially in the case of Daquan, the full complement of reps that you had hoped for going in?
Yeah. Thank you. I felt, Bo's job isn't too taxing. Let's be honest, but he did come out fine. Daquan, did fine from a cardiovascular standpoint. So hopefully that will continue to be the case with the players after they pass the ramp up period and the return to play protocol as they work through the COVID-19 list.
Steve Lehman.
Yeah, Mike, it seems like the narrative nationally has definitely switched on Ryan Tannehill from last year when he came to Tennessee to the numbers he's been able to put up. How have you seen him change, if at all, since he's walked into your building? And what do you think those people were missing a year ago?
I'm sure the narrative's changed on a lot of us here in Tennessee, but that just goes, by how you do. And Ryan's done extremely well. He hasn't changed one bit since he got here. Maybe I think that the biggest thing would be that there's just a larger leadership role. I think he was, mindful of that when he first got here. And then as things progressed and he became our quarterback, I think that naturally increased. But other than his preparation and his play and how he prepares in a weight room and physically to get himself ready and his relationship with Arthur, I don't think that's changed or done anything. I mean, it's still very good, and they meet a lot and they meet often, and they try to be on the same page, obviously, when a call comes in. So we can't try to control the narrative other than just by how we play.
I imagine you guys feel very confident, though, when the team does what they did last night against Derek, that you can put the ball in his hands and he'll lead you to good things.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what you have to have on offense. I think that when, something's not there or something may be a little off or somebody's doing a good job against a certain phase, that you have other things that can pick you up that you can go to.
David Buckler.
Mike. Two games in a row now, you've gone extended periods without Taylor Lewan. What has Cimbrio shown you, and how much more confident, I guess, are you in him having seen him play a bit?
That's why we got Ty, and that's why we felt like he'd be a good addition in the offseason. Somebody that's played meaningful snaps in this league and had some versatility. And that's what happens. He's ready to go at a couple different spots if somebody were to go down, and that makes it nice that you can come in and have somebody ready to go that's playing at a good level.
Yeah, time for three follows here, Teron.
Yeah, Coach, you're going against Romeo Crennel, a guy you've played for and coached alongside of. What are some of the lessons you've been able to gather from him, both as a player and fellow coach?
Well, it's interesting, you know, when you you know, played for a guy in two different places and, you know, coached with him, and then now having coached against him, he loves football. He loves the players. He brings a calmness, you know, I think he keeps things in perspective. You know, I think that he has seen a lot throughout his career, and he has the ability to coach players differently based on maybe what they need. Some may need a father figure. Some may need to be coached a little harder. And he's always, at least since I've been around him and as a player and as a coach, he's always found the right way to do those things to each and every guy.
He praised you for your preparation, your hard work, but then also your motivational skills. What type of impact did he have on you as far as pressing that button for you as a player?
Yeah, that's actually, you know, a good point, a great question, because I was a player when I got to New England. I had never started a game in Pittsburgh, and so I had this burden of trying to be perfect on each and every play and say that I'm never going to make a mental error or everything was going to be exactly right and try to make up for whatever, you know, talent gap that I had maybe. And so I would press, or if I'd make a mistake, I'd carry it with me. And, you know, I remember, I think it was Atlanta and something happened and, you know, he came over, he's like, you can't function like that in life or in this game, especially. You can't just let it, you know, eat at you because you made the wrong check or you did the wrong assignment. And, you know, it was great. It was always a great, you know, relationship, you know, to this day, check on him and Rosemary and, you know, their family and their kids and their grandkids. And, you know, he'd been one of those mentors when I talk about my coaching career, my playing career, that when you make stops along the way that, you know, you have people have a positive impact on your life. I would say that Romeo Crennel is certainly one of those people.
Thank you.
John.
Yeah, Mike, on the running game front with Derek, maybe the one thing that we haven't seen so far is kind of the bigger chunk plays, you know, 10 or 15 or beyond. You see something different at all from last year, or do you think those will just come in time as the season progresses?
I hope we have a bunch of 60-yard runs. If not, we'll just have to keep churning away and keep working, you know, and trying to hit some home runs. But, you know, give them credit. They tackled well. It was a good tackling football team. And, you know, we'll get back to it. We've got a new challenge this week and playing the Texans. And hopefully we can find ways to run the football this week.
Last two, Jim.
Mike, how much does a play like Derrick Henry's stiff arm ignite a sideline? And as a player, did you ever get got with a stiff arm?
It was the best 5-yard run I've ever seen, Jim. It was amazing. And Adrian Peterson got me one time, and I knew I was getting close to the end.
And last thing from me, did you notice the fans last night at the game, and was it good to have them back, and how much you're looking forward to maybe the attendance increase?
Yeah, I did. It was great to see those fans those people that were able to come out. It made it better. You know, it made it better. And, you know, going from the last home game we had where there were the 8 fans that had won the promotional event. And it was great to see those people out there, and they were loud. I mean, they cheered, and it was noticeably different.
Last one, Steve.
Yeah, Mike, I'd love to ask Ben Jones this, but our opportunities are obviously few and far between this year. I just wondered if you had any reaction to him when you learned that he shadowed a complete game in his backyard a week ago when you guys were off.
You know, all those guys are trying, you know, I mean, they're professionals and they're trying to stay ready and be prepared for whenever they were going to tell us that we were going to play. So, you know, those things that our guys do, especially Ben and in a lot of our players, it doesn't surprise me the sacrifice that they make for their football team and their teammates.
Thanks, Coach. Appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
Here you go. Head Coach Mike Vrabel talking to the media after the 42-16 victory last night over the Bills to move to 4-0 on the season. Next up will be the Texans. What stood out to you guys in what we just heard the last 25 minutes?
Really good stuff on Romeo Crennel and his influence. He also, I think, started to lay out the challenge of bouncing back so quickly against the team that's going to be, needless to say, desperate in the Texans, and a team that would just love to beat the Titans. You know that there'll be a lot of mental motivation in the Texans' corner for that. Also, I was surprised that not one person asked him about the statement from Roger Goodell, because I would think you would jump at the chance if you're Mike Vrabel to address that, because I think it says a lot about, you know, they were challenged. I think we would all have to say we were wondering, right? I think we've never had any reason to doubt Mike Vrabel or John Robinson with all the noise that was going on out there. You really worried that the walls were closing in, but you know, they stuck to their guns, and there was definitely a different outlook presented by the commissioner. They sort of changed their outlook on the whole thing, and I just would have loved to hear Mike Vrabel talk about that.
It was an interesting word that Tim Hasselbeck used when I asked him about that. Universal. He said this wasn't local, this wasn't nationally, this was universal of what everybody thought was about to happen to the Titans. That's pretty strong. That's pretty strong comments. Yes. And I want to know how it became.
It was beyond a sports story. It was on the non-sports news shows.
Yes.
Right?
So how does it go from universal, the Titans are about to get the hammer from the NFL, to here we are today, and there's a campfire, and we're roasting marshmallows, and everything is great. I mean, how does that happen? I don't think I can remember something like that, where universally, that's what Tim Hasselbeck said, it was universal, local, national, everybody was hearing the same stuff. They, uh-oh, watch out. There's a reason why this stuff is being reported by Adam Schefter. There's a reason why this stuff is being reported by Mike Florio. There's a reason it's to the levels that they're throwing out there. To today, hey, us and the Titans, this is the league. Us and the Titans, we're cool. Everything's good. Nothing to see here. I can't remember a story like that where everybody was talking about it. Everybody was pointing out and hinting that it was going all one direction. And 5-6 days later, the birds are chirping. It's quiet. It's zen. And everything is fine. Nothing to see here.
Yep, and that's exactly what it is. And Pella Windows and Doors, the sponsor of our live press conferences here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. The Kamala Correa stuff stood out to me too. That he did, he addressed it, and he said if we can't find a trade for him, we'll release him. We'll move on. You can tell that it's, if you don't want to be here, then we don't want you here.
That's, I don't know if he really addressed so much. It was pretty quick.
Yeah, it was, but
that's
it
addressing
was,
it.
It was so. A matter of fact. Thing. It wasn't, you know, we've talked to Kamalai and we
wish him the best. He didn't give out the typical, we wish him the best in his future endeavors. We appreciated everything he did while he was here. It was short, brief, and he addressed it because he was asked about it from Kayla Anderson, and it was very short, very brief, moving right along. Which,
but I'm fine with that.
Behind the scenes, it wasn't a pretty scene when he says that him and the general manager had a talk with Correa.
Right, but I'm totally fine with the moving right along, because why waste a lot of time on a guy that doesn't want to be here?
Oh, I didn't say I wasn't fine with it. I just said it was very brief, and it was not your typical thanks for the memories, thanks for your hard work, we wish you the best. There was none of that.
Right, and I mean,
it was almost like he was saying, I'll put in a good word for him somewhere else. You know, if it, like, but if you don't want to be here, we got plenty of other things. We got a game on Sunday. And we got a long list of things to address here today. And so we're not going to go out of our way to have a, you know, some sort of therapy session and try to talk him out of it, because that's just not how they roll.
If Correa thought it was going to go different, if he thought it was going to go differently, well, then he was yeah. mistaken.
And I don't know if he was or not. Like I don't, you know, Correa might just be saying,
I don't care.
It's not
going to
work
out.
Here. Yeah. I want yeah. out no matter yeah, what. Fine. I'm not looking for sympathy or anything like that. I just got to get out of here.
Yeah.
And that's fine. But I was in a situation playing basketball at Vanderbilt where we had a player who went into the coach and said he wanted to transfer. And I think really a big part of him thought that he was going to be eye-opened. But he was going to open the eyes of our coach, Coach Fogler. And say, and the coach was going to say, "Oh my gosh, I can't believe it! What have we done wrong? What can we do to make you want to stay?" And the answer was very direct. It was, "I'll call any coach you want. If that's what you want to do, that's what we'll do." And it was, I think the player was stunned. He couldn't believe it, right? But he had his answer, and everybody moved forward. But I think that's Vrabel's approach, especially in the middle of a really challenging part of the schedule here.
Yep. My whole thing is, you know, if they had been here a long time and it was the end, and okay, that's one thing. You say, hey, appreciate it. But if you're just, it's gotten too hard for you, or you're not playing enough, or you don't like the situation, you want to bounce, okay, see ya. Moving on. So I'm fine with how he handled it.
All right, we will come back and begin the fourth and final hour on this Wednesday edition of Darren, Donick, and Chase. ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.